Lucas Barfield.
And I'm Uncle Dig.
Yeah. Welcome to the Cannabis Corner. And we are back on the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield, and I am joined by my co-host, Uncle Dig. How is it going today, Uncle Dig?
It is a beautiful, sunny day. I'm having a great time.
And it is actually 420 today, folks. We are recording live here at the Cannabis Corner Studios on 420, and it's something that we did not really plan, but just kind of worked out. This was a great day for us to do this. And if you don't know, 420 is sort of a holiday that has come out over the years. A lot of lore behind it, where it came from and everything. You can read about it all online. But it is a day out of the year where we celebrate everything cannabis. And, you know, yesterday, Dig, I want to mention this, is another thing called Bicycle Day, which is actually the first day of the first modern day, quote, LSD trip. So 2 days right in a row, we're out there celebrating entheogens and plant medicine. What are you doing today on 420, Dig?
I am consuming a cartoonish amount of cannabis, and I am taking care of cannabis. I've got a small indoor garden going, and I may eat some pizza later. That's the extent of my plans today.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And I want to mention, everybody, really happy 420 out there to you. We have some really good news here on the Cannabis Corner. Something that we have covered on this show probably from the beginning of the show is the medical cannabis excise tax in Washington State. Now, to go over this again really quick, there are two types of patients in the state, authorized patients and registered patients, but everybody in the state had to pay this 37% excise tax on cannabis. Now, they have repealed that, Dig. So no longer are patients being charged that 37% excise tax in the state of Washington, which was the highest in the country.
That is huge. This was one of the biggest points of contention that a lot of people had about Washington's medical programs and its shortcomings. And I was surprised when I heard about this, to be honest. And I know this sounds kind of cynical, but I had given up on any short-term improvement in the cannabis legislative rules in Washington. I thought for the next 10 years it was stuck where it was or actually going backwards. So this has been a pleasant surprise to me, and this is a big shout out to all the activists and everybody that kept driving on and to get this done, because it finally happened. And y'all have been lobbying for this now for over half a decade, and it was looking like it wasn't going to happen. So this is really cool.
Yeah, and if the audience has listened to episode 56, the previous episode, we had John Kingsbury on here, who was the point person on this, and I personally testified on this thing 3 years back when we first got going on it. But you're right, it has been over half a decade, and big shout out to John and everybody else. The Cannabis Alliance was a big organization that got on this, and it finally moved forward. Now, home grows, not so much, and I'm with you on that one. You know, I'm not anticipating that actually to pass for a while, especially since now they got this medical cannabis tax break. I feel like they're going to be like, okay, we've done a big cannabis thing, and I'm not so sure about home grows coming on for a while.
Let's get your four plants or six plants or whatever it is, but that is still a big thing that we need to agitate for in Washington, is for you guys to be able to grow at home. If you're a able and willing adult who's 21 and over, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to grow four or six plants or whatever it is. I would argue for more, but I'm trying to be realistic here.
So I believe the tax break will kick in on July 1st. Now, you have to be what's called a registered patient, which means you have to go see a naturopath or a doctor, get a paper, and then go to one of these stores and get registered. And then you can be eligible for one of these for the tax break, which is only on specific medical cannabis products. But these products, Dig, are both pesticide and heavy metal tested. So right now, Washington State's test for pesticides, but it's more like a random thing. And so, but these products that are the medical cannabis, like every one of them have been tested for heavy metals and pesticides, which is a big deal.
That's good.
Now, we're going to get going, but before we get started, I want to remind everybody, if you want to check out back episodes of The Cannabis Corner, you can go online and check us out at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com. There we have archives all the way back for a couple seasons. If you want to hear all of our shows, you can go on radiotacoma.org, or you can search us up on YouTube, The Cannabis Corner, and if you Google The Cannabis Corner YouTube and then my name, Lucas or Uncle Dig, then it'll come up there for you. And there on YouTube, we also have every Cannabis Corner episode all the way back to the very first episode. I wanted to put those online so we could kind of hear the evolution of the show. Interesting, they listened back to some of those, Dig, and what was going on back then with medical cannabis, but as we said, the medical cannabis tax break has been removed in Washington State. And happy 420, everybody.
Happy 420.
And Dig is going to be online later with us to interview a guest. Dig, who did you interview for our spot later?
Yeah, I ordered the breeder and owner-operator of Gemseeker Genetics, Caveman. He is a breeder based out of Oklahoma, but one of the reasons we had him on the corner is Oklahoma had an opportunity, you know, at a fork in the road a few months ago where they had the opportunity to legalize recreational after they already had an existing medical program like Washington did. And we know the route that Washington took, but Oklahoma took a different route and did not legalize recreational cannabis. So we talked a little bit about that and also a little bit about autoflower breeding and how Caveman makes his selections in the garden to breed with.
Yeah, really looking forward to hearing that later. But right now, let's get to our news. And now, let's check the news.
This is a Cannabis Sativa special report.
Our first story, we're going to cover a topic that we're always talking about here on the Cannabis Corner, and that is cannabis social equity. And just to bring the audience up to date, if you don't know what that is, it's the idea that the drug war had a extra effect on Black, Indigenous, and other people of color communities out there. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to help these communities get into the cannabis industry. What happened, Dig, was when the cannabis industry came in, all the people with the money, which as we know are white folks and white males dominated mostly, came in and took over the industry. So social equity is the idea that we want to try to correct this and get people caught up with what's going on in the industry, because people of color really built this or helped build the medical cannabis industry and have been largely left out of the adult cannabis industry. So we're going to start in Massachusetts. They actually awarded their social equity grants, and they actually have a trust fund there, but they only put out $2.35 million. So that's $2,355,000 they have given out to these social equity applicants. And if you go over to ganjapreneurs.com, you can see the list. And it's a long list, Dig. And it's really great these folks are getting the money. And I applaud the states for doing this thing. But when you spread it out that like that, I mean, you look at it, each store is getting like $25,000, $50,000. I mean, your license sometimes costs $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 just itself.
And I'm not 100% how Massachusetts runs their industry, like how it's separated. But some of these places don't even seem like they're stores. They seem like they might be cultivators or processors. And I don't know if anyone's familiar with cultivation or processing at scale, but these amounts can seem large, but they rapidly become drops in the bucket when you're operating a large farming operation.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get an extractor machine for a good machine for $50,000. I mean, I get this. I'm involved with a hemp fire sale, I think it's called, and they're always trying to sell equipment. I get emails. I mean, these things are like $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 machines.
Oh, it's wild.
So yeah, $50,000 is like, it's just a drop in the bucket. So not sure how this is playing out. I do know if you look around the country on what's going on with social equity, it has helped some people, but largely it's been sort of a flop. It's not enough to help these communities recover after 100 years of drug war. And if we're looking down at San Diego, I think they're having so much problems getting this going that they have actually wanted to give the money back to the state. They don't even want to participate. San Diego said, nope, we're going to try to give the money back. Here in Washington State, here a quick update. According to Jim McCray, a friend of the show, the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board, they are now taking the social equity licenses, but they have given out 3 and tabled 90, Dig, which is not a very good ratio.
Yeah, that sounds like they don't really want to approve that many.
Yeah, and Washington is really skimp on their amount of money they're giving out, too. I mean, it's not even nearly as much as Massachusetts. So we are really crossing our fingers that the states get caught up with the social equity programs. But I think what would just help the most is just open up the market altogether. We don't have all the solutions, but that would definitely be one of the solutions. Just open it up more, drop all the big time license fees, start treating cannabis like a regular business. And I think that would really go a long ways to get the social equity programs going.
Yeah.
And speaking of business, we want to talk about the cannabis business around the country. And this is an article out of Normal. And according to Normal in the study, the cannabis industry right now in the United States, Dig, employs 440,000 people right now.
Wild. That's good. I was looking at this, and there are some good things about the report. Job growth increased more than 5% between 2022 and 2023. And cannabis sales grew overall 10%, and growth was especially strong in Michigan and more nascent adult use markets such as Missouri, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. But some states experienced negative growth during the past year, and they're saying that, like, we and I have been talking about the industry kind of tanking in more established markets. Part of that is there was a big spike of demand during COVID that has since kind of fallen off as social life has returned more to normal. Consumption has returned more to pre-COVID levels of consumption. So there was a big influx of new cannabis consumers, or cannabis consumers that were consuming much more cannabis during COVID and the years after. And most of those people and those artificial increases are gone.
Yeah, the industry's plateaued, and you just, it's really, and they said it was 10 states saw declining sales. And I know Washington was one, Colorado was one, but I think there's only like 20 or 21 states that have legalized adult use, maybe 19. So 10 states out of that is a very big amount. So,
well, I know Oregon is, I see articles every day, like Oregon is having an oversupply problem, apparently. Like, there's more cannabis than they can sell. But that's always a problem in Oregon, if we're being honest. I feel like every 3 years, everyone's panicking because Oregon grew more weed than Oregon can smoke. But it happens a lot.
Yeah, so this can continue to maybe grow. And there's a lot of reasons for this if we really look into it. The underground market, like you were saying, the declining sales. People were just like, they went out and tried cannabis for a while, and they're like, oh, no, maybe I'll just go back to what I was doing before. So we'll keep an eye on the waning cannabis market as moving forward. And, you know, I hope that we can kind of turn it around, because we don't want this to be a flop and then everything go back to the way it was with more illicit market. Because if the stores start going out of business, the growers go out of business, then it's just going to kind of become, oh, we got to start busting people again for this. So we really are rooting for the cannabis industry to succeed, but it's having some problems right now.
Well, right. But I also think that it's going to have to go through a stabilization period. You know, we've been boom and bust the entire time the industry has existed. We went through a period of this right after medical went full wreck. Every state goes through a boom and a bust cycle after that happens. It's built into how the industry works. And right now, it's very state by state. But as everyone has a 10-plus, 20-plus year-old cannabis industry, there's not going to be as much room in the industry for new people, because the market's going to be saturated. So there's gonna come a time where it's not a growth industry. It's an industry that sustains at a certain level and maybe grows 1.5% a year, and that's it. And I think people need to learn that infinite growth isn't going to work here, because people can only smoke so much. People can only consume so much cannabis. And once you've reached everyone that you can reach through effective marketing, you've got all the potential weed smokers and you know, medical patients and everyone using cannabis. So there's not anyone left to find.
So our next story is, we're going to go down and look at a story in Arizona in Phoenix, and we're going to talk about unionization real quick in the cannabis industry. And we covered a story a while back where there was some retaliation in Oregon around unions. This is a controversial issue in all industries, but especially right now in cannabis. Some Curaleaf employees down in Phoenix are doing a protest today on 420, and they are protesting Curaleaf backing out of a raise. So a couple years ago, the workers voted to join the United Food and Commercial Workers Union 99 there in Phoenix. But of course, Curaleaf is not happy with that, and they have refused to negotiate with the union. And the employees have said that Curaleaf won't give them a raise that they said they were going to give them before the union thing ever got started. There's been some back and forth, some lawsuits going on, but that's really great that the workers are out there protesting.
Yeah, and that's that kind of sounds like union retaliation. So I hope that the National Labor Relations Board gets involved too. Support to the UFCF, the UFCW Local 99. We're pretty pro union here on the Cannabis Corner. So shout out to those folks. And if they're saying that, if the union there is saying that you should shop elsewhere on 420, then that's what you should do. And if the union says you should shop there and give your support to the workers, and that was what you should do. You know, some unions use boycotts and some don't. It depends on what the union's saying. So I support whatever tactic they're going to be using.
Yeah, then last year around 420, and we missed this story, but Green Thumb Industries, they did a strike in Chicago, 13 days against Green Thumb Industries there in Chicago, that's the home of that particular cannabis multi-state operator. And it actually won the workers some raises. And on the back to the Curaleaf thing, the Labor Relations Board is involved, and they've ordered Curaleaf to start negotiating with the union, but they have, of course, refused. There is a lawsuit going on. We will keep an eye on this. And the unions are growing in the cannabis industry, but it's a lot of times underground industry, and a lot of people that have came out of that area, they don't want the unions because that means more control to workers. They can't exploit people with their low wages and things like that. So unions aren't the most popular thing in the cannabis industry.
No. And there's like you said, there's a lot of complicated reasons for that.
So our last story, we are going to bring the audience up to date on something that has been kicking around for a couple of years, and that is Germany has decided to expand their cannabis market. They had a medical cannabis market, but now this is only applying to German citizens, which I think that's a good idea. Germany can do what they want to with this. They have decided to basically decriminalize cannabis. Tell us some of the numbers on their bill over there, Dig.
Yeah, it seems like they've kind of legalized small amounts for personal consumption. So people can carry 25 grams for personal consumption, and apparently they can grow up to 3 plants at home if they're German citizens, which is really neat. And they can looks like they can consume at home and at certain cannabis clubs. And then there's a way where 500 members can join a cannabis club and get a monthly allowance of 50 grams of cannabis. So it looks like they've gone kind of conservative with their legalization law, which makes sense. So Germany may not want to follow the Netherlands example. So they're doing a little bit more conservative approach, and maybe they don't want to encourage drug tourism, which I guess I understand. I hope that eventually they loosen this up and maybe extend it to non-German citizen, because I would one day like to visit Germany, and I would like to be able to medicate while I'm there.
Yeah, Amsterdam has been in the news a lot lately. They have been rolling back some of the things that were going on in Amsterdam, I think. So I know especially Germany has said, hey, we don't want to be the next Amsterdam. We don't want drug tourism. So that's why they're just doing German citizens. But they did acknowledge that that's not going to be able to go on forever. So I think sooner or later they'll start opening that up after they get this established.
Right.
And this is a good model for other countries who are a little more conservative on these issues, like the UK. And so, you know, Spain has already got their cannabis market somewhat open. So it's really great to see things expanding over there in Europe. So now let's get on to our guest.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
Hello, everyone. Please welcome to the Cannabis Corner, Cavemane, owner and operator of the cannabis breeder, Gem Seeker Genetics. Hey, Caveman, how you doing today?
What's up, everybody? Just having some fun. Been excited about this interview, man.
Yeah. I've been really excited about it, too. This is actually my first solo interview for the radio show, so I'm excited as well. And I wanted to have you on because there's some dissimilarities between where the law where you're based and the law here in Tacoma. So you're based in Oklahoma, is that right?
Yes, I am.
And I understand that Oklahoma just recently-ish, you know, it's been in the past like year and a half, recently in plant time, just shot down their rec and home grow initiative, right? In favor of leaving just a medical market, correct?
Yep, that is true.
And this is a very different approach than Washington took when it legalized recreational. It had a somewhat robust medical program with a provision to grow at home for medical patients, and then they passed a rec bill. We passed a rec bill here with no home grow provision. And so that's been a completely different approach that Oklahoma took, which is keeping it medical. Now you're a home grower and a patient, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, I understand that Oklahoma had some small plant limits when their medical first started. But since then, they've increased the plant limits to patients to more like 6. It was like 2, I remember. And then it's like more than that now, right?
From what I remember, it's always been 6. And then, I think it's always been 6. I don't even remember the talks of the 2.
Oh, weird. I wonder where I pulled that from.
I wonder, like, a lot of Oklahomans, like, we went to vote and stuff and didn't really, like, we knew it was on there, but we probably didn't think it would ever actually happen. I think that was
so everyone's like, yeah, sure, it's not gonna pass, and then it did.
Evie, and then it's like, what the f-?
So you were surprised it passed. It wasn't something that anyone even in the state expected. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, man, it was a super surprise.
So fast forward here a couple of years, y'all've had your medical program. The rec bill fails. Now, I understand that some people in the community wanted it not to pass.
A lot of people, and that's true. But I would think also a lot of the people that wanted it to pass weren't really in the community. They weren't even from probably Oklahoma.
Okay.
And I would think, you know, obviously you're going to have it on both sides, both ways, but we had a lot of transplant going on, which is beautiful. That's kind of what Oklahoma is, so that's dope. But like, obviously, cannabis community was a little different. It was more like a, and I think that's where a lot of people got upset was with how it went down, because Oklahomans were really looking for the chance to like have their shot, and then it really, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I get the impression that some people within the local grower community that sprang up of native Oklahomans felt like a bunch of people moved to Oklahoma and started cannabis business in this walled garden, and then, you know, a lot of growers want to keep weed as limitedly legal as possible so they can profit more from it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there was a little bit of that going on. And there's also, like you said, you know, there was a bit of a gold rush that happened when medical passed. A major gold
rush, and that definitely tanned some hides, as they'd say around here. But I was just listening to your podcast before I started this. But anyways, yeah, I think that ticked a lot of people off. Like, I think it's dope and all that. Like, the explosion, we got to see some really crazy cool stuff. Got to see a lot of boof. much, but there's definitely some amazing growers out here and some passionate people, whether they're Oklahoman or not. The best of the best. There's some of them out here, and it's beautiful to see.
Yeah, yeah. Now, and that's good. But since the rec failed, how did the state legislature react?
It had to happen, like, for the better, to not have the rec, like, because, like, I've mentioned this in a podcast previous, like, unless we're going to have all of our stuff for our medical program, like, just put into, like, it be a constitutional right, you know?
Yeah.
We really need to allow the rec, but the issue with that is, if we don't vote for the rec, and what they saw was they were like, oh, they don't like weed, you know? And that's obviously not the, you know, that's really ignorant to look at it that way, but that's, you know, that's how they're going to look at it, unfortunately.
And honestly, I've seen a sea change in Oklahoma. I come back every 5 years, and it's different every time.
Well, what I think they did, but here's my opinion, is they blew it out. You know, they gave all this, like, free reign, and then they just like did what the government does and just regulate it to a shit show, to where it really just it devastated a lot of, like, if they were hoping to do good things for Oklahoman families, it did the complete opposite, and a lot of people risked it all on it. Or, you know, it started off at just a little bit, maybe that was the dream, it was like a $2,500 little start, you know. You get started for 10 G's or something like that. Now, you know, you can't even, you got to have some like $50,000 bond. This was the latest thing. It was like overnight you had to have this $50,000 thing or you couldn't operate. And
well, it's a weird archaic regulation Oklahoma thing where they made a regulation and then they didn't enforce it because they didn't have the funds to enforce the regulation. So no one did it, right?
As like they're talking about one of the things is like an occupancy certificate, and you know, it makes sense to go, oh yeah, obviously these people need occupancy certificates, so bad boys, you know. But if you look at Oklahoma as a whole, they're not even like that on any other business in Oklahoma. Like they're not like pressuring people like that for other things, so it doesn't really make sense.
Well, I read some statistics in some outlying, like, more rural Oklahoma counties that, like it takes a year and a half to get the fire marshal or whoever has to, like, give you your certificate of occupancy to even come out and inspect. So there are counties in Oklahoma that, like, have year and a half backlogs and have, like something like 5% compliance rates or something. It's crazy. Yeah.
And that's also, I do need to reiterate that I'm blissfully ignorant in this whole situation, and I don't have anything to do with any like commercial anything. So luckily, like, I don't know anything about it really. And all I know is hearsay and what I've heard. And I really have ADHD really bad. So if I'm like going to read something, you know, who knows if I, if I comprehended it 100%. So
Oh, no, this is good. And it's important for like small batch kind of hobby breeders to have a voice in the scene as well.
Absolutely. But then that's what's great. This is, if we're talking about what things I can control or what I can do, if I could be at a meeting or whatever, that's what really gets me is they'll set up some stuff where they're like, oh, we want to hear from people in the community, the public, yada, yada. But it'll be some time that's just like, you know, I work so much. I can't make it to I can never make it to any of these meetings I ever see. It's just like, whatever, what can I do? It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to, and they make them hard to attend on purpose. Yeah, I feel like.
Absolutely. Well, they did one here purposely where they did it in such a small room and they got a bunch of rowdy. First of all, this whole meeting was over a bunch of like serious things that were changing a lot of people's lives. And it was going to close down a lot of people like almost immediately. And they said, okay, we'll get, you know, all the big dogs, like the people who were in charge of everything. We'll get the public to listen and ask questions. And they got it in such a small room that it, you know, it just got rowdy and they closed it out. And it was weird because I think like, and this is all hearsay again, I don't know how these laws and stuff go, but like, apparently you're supposed to have a meeting. You're supposed to have it in a room that's large enough for like to accommodate the public. Like there's not supposed to be people like sitting out in the hallways and stuff. Like if it's brought to people, then everyone that's around it should be able to listen and focus in and hear everything. It was just weird that they just set this thing up in just like an office room, you know?
Yeah. It sounds like, it sounds like, you know, every time they set up a meeting, the people in Oklahoma, this is hearsay, but the Oklahoma rule makers or whoever's making these meetings is kind of sabotaging any community effort to lobby the government from the community. You said
a word, Dig, and that's what's crazy is like we were watching this live and it seemed like they shut this whole damn thing down because what looked like to be a plant, I'm going to be like, from what I saw, it looked like a plant. Like this dude, he wasn't any representative in any community that I want to be represented by. He was like, just like yelling and like getting rowdy. Like you knew damn well what you're doing. You're going to get this shut down. And it just seemed like he was put there to do that.
Yeah, that's weird. But I mean, there's all kinds of agent provocateurs that people use to shut down movements.
So we get this small, we put everybody in the small room that we know we should probably have a bigger room for. And then like, you know, maybe we have some dude come in and get a little rowdy and now we got to close it down. And I don't even think, I never heard any reconvening or whatever you'd call it. Like just a reschedule of the meeting, you know?
Oh, so it's just gone now. Good luck.
We'll have it when we have it and it never comes. So, but then blissfully ignorant and they might've had done it or whatever, who knows? So.
Do you think Oklahoma's going to recriminalize or that they're going to try to do that?
I kind of see some crazy stuff like as twisted as it can be, you know. I could see them trying, but I think the box is open, man.
You think maybe they won't recriminalize, but they'll just make it exceedingly difficult maybe?
Oh, yeah. Probably.
Okay, that makes sense.
Probably like everywhere else, man, where it all goes to greed and they just want to have a few operators that they collect their taxes from and all those operators produce boof and they'll probably have lobbyists that try to rip away your home grow or whatever. And
that's the fear, right?
The ultimate fear, because now you're just stuck in the same situation.
Well, and if you have specialty medical needs,
absolutely.
A lot of times to get the right terp profiles and to get the plants you need, a lot of times you have to grow them yourself.
And in my experience, they're like, oh, I think that's a big push now is like sterilization of, you know, cannabis. And that's just the worst thing you could possibly think of.
Yeah.
I get that like maybe a, like, let's call it like a zero reefer, right? Like that has absolutely not like that maybe gets like sterilized in some way and has nothing or whatever. It's 100% guarantee for a certain patient that needs that. Like that, maybe that needs to be an option, but like,
right.
Not every nug everywhere, man. That's the worst thing I could think of.
Well, right. Yeah. And that would like, so what he's talking about is he's talking about a completely, zero contaminant cannabis, meaning that the plant material is there and the plant material only, completely from root to tip. It is never, it's just cannabis. There's no inputs that leave residue, no nothing, which is really hard to do organically, but organic flower is healthier. The reason you need that sterile flower and certain producers need to be able to produce it, like he says, is for people who need to use medical cannabis who have extremely compromised immune systems to where they can't intake even a little bit of, I'm trying to think of an example of something that's in cannabis flower, like maybe a bacteria or something that is innocuous.
Aspergillus, I think that's a big major one.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy about Aspergillus. We do not have time to get into that.
I don't know. And then that's kind of, seeing that brings up another topic for me, or like thought process for me, is like, if there is this super autoimmune compromised, like, I don't know if smoking is necessarily the thing for you, you know, but I'm not a doctor, so.
Well, no, and that's where you get into, like, really getting out of the bro science, and you're getting into, like, cooking science, because there's a lot of stuff that goes into medicating with cannabis, especially if you're doing it at home. Like, if you're decarboxylating it, if you're eating it and you're heating it to 225 degrees for however long, did it matter if it was sterile going in? Cause it probably is now. I mean, you would think, right? But I am not willing to say. And I know that there are like raw or like more raw preparations of cannabis that some people use for the secondary health benefits, like almost like weed pestos and stuff. So if you're eating it like that, then maybe sterile cannabis is more important. There's a lot of variables.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to bring that. That's a very thick topic for
it. Oh my God. We could sit here and get into the weeds. Yeah. You're all good.
It's just crazy. Those are my fears, is having home grow ripped away from us and then them trying to sterilize all of our stuff, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll be bad for the cannabis genetic diversity, too, because it'll limit producers and that'll limit variety and seed stock.
Absolutely. And just inevitably make more good people criminals again. And
yeah, because people are going to keep growing.
Yeah, man, because it's what needs to be done. It's a beautiful plant. It's the most awesome plant out there.
It is. It's my favorite plant for sure. Now, you breed cannabis seeds, right? I know you do it on a small scale, but you still do it. How long have you? Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm just having fun. I've created some pretty amazing seeds. First one was a one-off, and ran through them and found some amazing stuff. Same time I was running through them, I gave them out to a bunch of people. They found the same stuff I was finding. And yeah, man, the fills on them are just incredible.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have personally grown some of your genetics. And I will say personally that I don't know what terps you gravitate toward in your breeding program. And we'll get to that in a minute, but I gravitate toward your candy strains, the ones that have like grape or candy terps, and those have been very interesting.
I like to have just a little bit of gas on them, a little bit of everything.
Yeah,
but that's just to keep it on the palate. And so then
do you gravitate toward gas and candy mostly for breeding?
I gravitate towards whatever's good or whatever I'm into.
Okay.
With the autos, man, that profile gassy auto, it had all that good stuff in there. It had candy profile, had gas in there. It had a really good tropical. I can find that pretty, even, you know, three generations out from other, just branching out to different strains.
So you found one keeper and kept breeding with it, and it just kept producing excellent progeny.
I got incredibly lucky with a reversal, and I grew the progeny, and it just it did the same thing, slightly the same thing through all three. I only moved forward with one of those, and yeah, I can still see her in everything, all of it. There's just a little bit of her still.
That's awesome that you can work with a plant, you know, family tree for a couple years, maybe even beyond that, and still see the original plant in its progeny. Now, I understand terps, but when you're looking for plant structure, when you're breeding, is there something that you look for specifically?
Breathability. I like breathability, but I want a good productive plant also.
What do you mean by breathability?
Like the inside of the plant isn't all dense inside of it.
Oh, okay. So for the audience, when you're pruning a plant, when you harvest a whole autoflower, it's short. It could be anywhere from on the shorter side, 12 inches, to the taller side, 3 feet. But the inside is going to be loosely foliated so that mold doesn't form inside. So the bud's going to be toward the top and outside of the branches.
Mm-hmm.
And
Gassiato had a really, not like an extremely dominant atypical meristem, but like the middle branch, you know, it will go a little longer than the others, but the the lateral branching will meet catch up about halfway with the main center cola.
Yes.
What's inside of it, you don't really need to do a bunch of like dense defoliation because like she focuses a lot of her energy towards the outside bud sides, which is really cool.
Yeah, they're pretty easy to trim. There and to harvest at the end of the cycle. So of your grows since Oklahoma legalized, what's been your favorite one so far?
I got Unicorn that I'm still chasing right now. I had this Black Line Punch.
Okay.
I was upset that I lost it, but it was incredible. That was my favorite. It was like 56-day finisher and just had all the grape candy gas, but like not that you're typically used to, you know, that's a big thing right now. This had more sourness. It had this astringent like uniqueness to it. It's really nice. It's got that black lime reserve in it.
Okay.
And that, so it was a Purple Punch by Black Lime Reserve. Purple Punch, you know, grows real great, tastes real good, but it's kind of lacking in potency. But Black Iron Reserve really brought the potency back with that, and also brought some really cool bud structure to it, kind of calmed the plant down with how fast it was growing, and really brought some derpy effects to it.
Nice.
Like just some stupid highs, man. Like it's pretty freaking sweet. What you're awesome. Looking for.
So we're about out of time. Where can people find you if they want to look for more of your content?
I'm on Instagram.
Okay.
Feel free to shoot a DM to me anytime you feel like. If you got any questions.
And that's at Gemseeker Genetics, correct?
Gemseeker Genetics at Demi Grows, yeah.
All right. Well, back to the corner.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com. All right, really great interview there by Dig, and we are moving into our last segment of the show, and that is our It's a Bus segment. And this is the part of the show where we talk about the drug war that's still ongoing around the country, and people out there are still getting arrested for cannabis. And I have to tell you what, Dig, I had a lot of stories to choose from this week. 350 plants found up in Maine, and then we had like a lady was caught with 60 pounds at the airport. So a lot of stories going on out there when it comes to cannabis. The one I thought that was most interesting was the one that I saw was out of Memphis, and someone was busted with over 500 pounds of cannabis, and it's kind of a wild story. It took the police two raids and then an extra raid to finally catch the guy. First raid was like 307 pounds. The second raid, they got 253 pounds or something like that. And then how much jewelry and cash did they find on these folks, Dig?
$70,000 worth of jewelry and over $180,000 in cash.
And they also had a stolen gun. And, you know, and then another person was busted with a pound and then a bunch more money. I think $5,000 in cash, like I was saying, at that third raid at another house. And it's just interesting to me how much money the police must have spent to catch this person. And it's interesting because right across the border there in Arkansas, medical cannabis is legal. Now, you were saying that you went to Arkansas recently and it's not allowed in the open. But Mississippi has medical cannabis. Alabama does. So there's a lot of markets around there that are trying to get going with cannabis. And so that's fueling a lot of the underground market. And this particular person, it looks like the Memphis police just said had enough. And it's not a happy 420 over there in Memphis today, I don't think, Dig, with this guy. Because that's a lot of cannabis to be taken off the market.
Oh yeah, and it sounds like he was making deliveries. It sounds like, because if he had a pound and a half in the car and all that cash, it sounds like he was wholesaling it. So there was a lot. There's probably a lot of people that don't have cannabis, like you said. This happened in the middle of March, so who knows if there's another plug that filled his spot, you know?
Yeah, and the police were all gung ho about it. They were saying in the article that they got all this cannabis off the streets, quote. And I thought that was interesting to kind of come down hard on it like that. Again, considering that there are people making money off medical cannabis down there right now. Now, Mississippi and Alabama, just to mention, they are having a heck of a time getting their stuff going.
Those cops are probably going to sell it out of the evidence locker now anyway. They're lying.
Quite a possibility. Happy 420, everybody. I hope you have enjoyed the show. I thank everybody for listening. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube and our blog spot. Also, thank you so much for being on the show with us, Dig. I'll see you next week.
See you next week. Happy 420. Bye.
If you have questions or would like to comment on the show, you can reach us at thecannabiscorner840@gmail.com. To listen to back episodes or to subscribe to the show, find us all across the internet by searching The Cannabis Corner. How can folks get in touch with you, Dig?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Uncle Dig, and you can listen to my podcast, The Bagseed Chronicles, wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you to Radio Tacoma and KTQA for their continued support. I'd also like to thank Aaron Foles for his production assistance. And finally, thank you for joining us on The Cannabis Corner.